Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. As the partial government shutdown continues, visitors to many of the Bay Area's national parks, including Muir Woods and Point Reyes National Seashore, are finding overflowing trash, locked bathrooms, and a lack of ranger presence. And we're going to discuss in this segment the shutdown's ecological impacts on the parks and what can be done to mitigate the damage. Joining us, Paul Rogers, managing editor of KQED Science Unit and environmental writer for the Mercury News. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Also good to have Neil Desai, who's here in studio with us, Pacific Region Field Director for National Parks Conservation Association. Welcome, Neil.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Let me begin with you, Neil. It's gotten pretty out of hand. In fact, a couple of our local congressional representatives, Jared Huffman and Jackie Speer, actually took trash to the White House. I'm sure you probably read about that, and said, you know, this is as bad as it is, because national parks are in control of Pennsylvania Avenue cleanup and landscape and whatnot. Let's get a picture from you. I mean, what we're reading about is all this trash and feces and people getting in who shouldn't be there and real destruction going on, too. I mean, some people are volunteering, trying to help the situation, but at the same time, things are deteriorating, aren't they?
This is a really bad situation right now for our national parks. The parks are hurting. Impacts are happening all across the ground, across the country. We're talking about ecological damage, wildlife harassment, trash and overflowing bathrooms, the types of things that would not be expected in our national parks. We're also seeing these impacts occurring to visitors who are coming to parks, finding them closed, or in some places open, unclear. Businesses locally are being impacted as well. And the government needs to reopen. Parks need to be fully staffed. The damage needs to be stopped. And let's be real. These decisions to keep these parks open with limited to no staffing is not coming from our local national park rangers or superintendents. This is a political call coming from the top of Department of Interior, who want to see these places open, don't want to see bad headlines, but it's a completely losing proposition. There's political pressure now being applied across the national parks to keep them open, regardless of the types of damage that we're seeing.
Ryan Zinke said as he left, you know, get your trash bags. I'm sorry for laughing at that, but it's just so cavalier and in many ways reckless. What can be done? You know, I know there are a lot of people who are going to wonder, what can they do to mitigate the damage now, as you see it?
I mean, this is purely a political situation. And in these situations, you know, sunshine is the best disinfectant. People need to know what's going on. I mean, for the most part, we really don't have a full picture of all the damage that has taken place or all of the problems that are occurring when you keep these places open, some of our country's most important and sensitive natural resources or cultural or historic features, open without park rangers or staffing. And the reason that we're getting information is because of the public stepping up and informing either the press or their local elected officials that, like, hey, this is what I'm seeing. This is a damage. This is a problem. And that's definitely one thing that can happen, because ultimately, you know, when this reaches enough people, they're going to realize we need to keep government open. And at least Congress right now, at least on the House of Representatives, is taking steps to pass bills and reopen government.
No, indeed, although we're pretty much in a kind of standstill here and in a cul-de-sac. I don't know how long it's going to go on, and nobody does. But Neil Desai, again, here with us in Studio Pacific Region, Field Director for National Parks Conservation Association. Let me go to Paul Rogers, who's Managing Editor of KQED Science Unit and Environment Writer for the Mercury News. Before we talk about the environment, Paul, I know you're quite acquainted with the history, park shutdowns. Not to get partisan here, but in 2013, when there was a shutdown, things were very different. The Trump administration wants to keep things open. The Obama administration kept them closed.
Yeah, it's a really good point. When you think about it, a lot of the government agencies in America are controversial. Either liberals like them and conservatives hate them, or conservatives like them and liberals hate them. And in this case, national parks are a point of pride for all Americans. They're one of the functions of the federal government that is liked by conservatives and liberals, and they are powerful political symbols. And when they are shut, they sort of become the face of the shutdown. In 1995, when Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton, as people may remember, were battling over whether to convert Medicare into a voucher system, as Gingrich was proposing, Gingrich basically shut down the government. And one of the main things that brought political pressure that forced him to back down and reopen the government was all the photos and TV news images of the Grand Canyon's front gates being padlocked. It offended American sense of the pride in their natural heritage and the pride in their history. Same thing before that, actually. In 1969, the Congress cut the budget to the National Park Service, and Richard Nixon shut the Grand Canyon and shut the Washington Monument. He could have made small cuts, but the public got so mad that the Congress relented and put money back in. So the Trump people knew that this was going to be an Achilles heel of any shutdown, and it was going to bring a lot of pressure on them, particularly from rural areas where conservative businesses depend on these parks. So they tried to learn from the Obama shutdown, and they basically and I don't even think it came from Zinke. I think it came from the White House. They basically said, keep the parks open. What they did was furloughed about 85% of the 24,000 national park employees. So there are still a few there. I mean, there are firefighters, there are law enforcement folks, EMTs. But anybody who goes to a national park is going to see there's nobody at the gates. You can breeze right through. The visitor centers are closed. In some cases, campgrounds are closed. In other cases, private concession companies are doing some of these things. But it's very haphazard. And, you know, I believe it's because the Trump administration didn't want all those photos and videos of padlocked gates to national parks.
I was reading, Paul, in the New York Times about the effect, overall effect on the ecosystem, and it's pretty serious. I mean, particularly when you're talking about, say, the desert environment of Joshua Tree, but taking that even a step further, you've got all this wildlife now, as Neil was suggesting, that's getting affected by this. We've got real concerns about not only wildlife, but fish, about redwoods and so forth. I mean, this is the big picture is pretty serious.
Yeah, and it depends how long it goes on for. You're right. There have been some shocking examples, people driving vehicles around in sensitive areas of the desert, cutting down Joshua trees, harassing wildlife in other places. That said, the parks are pretty resilient, and we're lucky right now, especially in California and the West, that it's the winter time, because the risk of massive wildfires without much, supervision in those parks would be really high if this was the summer. Luckily, places like Yosemite are wet and under snow. So that's one little thing. It's going to take a while to repair some of the damage.
Can we talk a little bit about visitor safety at Yosemite? I know that's of concern to you. You've written about it.
Yeah, there was a guy from Los Angeles who died on Christmas Day. He was hiking on the Mist Trail between the Vernal Fall and Nevada Fall. And he basically slid down and hit his head and died. Some folks have tried to connect that to the shutdown. I actually, from what I've seen, I'm not convinced that that's related, because people die in national parks regularly when they are open. But certainly, not having rangers there to enforce rules, not having supervision, increases the chance of these kind of deaths.
And, Neil, if I go back to you, Neil Desai, again, Pacific Region Field Director of National Parks Conservation Association, there's very little possibility of interviewing anybody up in the hierarchy of this. I mean, they put a muzzle on them. Even Joshua Tree, for example, director can't talk, can't give interviews. At least that's the order from coming from Washington.
Yeah, these parks at this point are not being managed by common sense or science or
Public relations.
Exactly. These are directives coming from Interior. I mean, take Joshua Tree, for example. This is a really interesting park in our system in the sensitive California desert. Department of Interior has mandated that these parks stay open, right, for the reasons that Paul said, right? They don't want to see the shut gates. But then Joshua Tree starts getting trash. The Joshua Tree, the ancient trees are being, damaged and kicked down, vehicles where they shouldn't be, trash and litter piling up. Social media and the public blows up on this. The Park Service realizes, hey, we have to close down this park. and actually assess the damage and see if it's responsible to keep this place open when we have really no staff. That right there then gets to what Paul was saying. That's a demonstration of this Interior Department's failure, right? Of a park is now having to close because of all this damage. So last night, the Park Service, you know, all of a sudden just announced, hey, we're reopening the park. We're actually not going to conduct an assessment of the damage and the resources problems. And this is essentially managing our parks by damage control and headlines and not really what the long-term mission of our parks are, which is to keep them protected for the long term.
So what do you suggest, Paul? We heard from Neil about maybe political action and the need for galvanizing the public and all the rest of that sort of thing. But in the meantime, as this drags on, and we don't know how long it's going to drag on, what can people do?
Well, if people want to visit parks, they should check online. Each park has a website. Some parks are open, some are closed. It's sort of catch as catch can. So, for example, in California, Muir Woods is closed, but you can still take a ferry boat out to Alcatraz Island because that's a private concession company that runs that. Sequoia Kings Canyon National Park is closed. Cabrillo National Monument in San Diego is closed. The Gateway Arch in St. Louis is closed. The Smithsonian Museums are closed. But Yosemite is open. But inside Yosemite, the Mariposa Grove, Hetch Hetchy, the Mist Trail, some of the campgrounds are closed. Redwood National Park is open. The Marin Headlands are open. It's just all over the place. Pinnacles National Monument, you can get in one side, the east side, but not the other side, the west side. So people should check ahead. If they go, they should bring a trash bag and pick up their trash and any trash they see. There's also sort of a funny slogan going around in some of these gateway communities. They're telling visitors, go before you go. In other words, go to the bathroom somewhere before you go inside the park, because there aren't going to be bathrooms in the park and you're going to have problems. We're also seeing lots of little sort of Band-Aids that are helping in some places. So, for example, the Marin County Board of Supervisors voted on Tuesday to provide county park rangers to clean the bathrooms and open the bathrooms at Point Reyes National Seashore. There are places like the Statue of Liberty, where Governor Cuomo in New York has approved $65,000 a day in state money to keep the Statue of Liberty open. Parks in Utah are open because of state money. So it really varies depending on where you go. So I would not recommend people just driving out to a park without doing their homework first.
Well, I'm going to give listeners an opportunity to join us. And in fact, if you have questions or comments, we're talking about the government shutdown and how it's affecting national parks. You can join us now. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls, so feel free to be part of the program. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. Or going to our website and posting questions or comments there at kqed.org/forum. Simply click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. You can also, of course, go to our Facebook page. Neil Desai with us in studio from the National Parks Conservation Association, and Paul Rogers with us by phone, managing editor of KQED Science Unit and environment writer for the Mercury News. And here's a comment from Michael, who writes, the NPS shutdown has hidden issues, too. Workers missing from the archives at Point Reyes National Seashore and the National Maritime Museum in San Francisco mean these assets are not being properly monitored, and work to make materials available for other museums is on hold. Some thoughts from you on that, Neil?
The effects of government shutdown are cascading, right? It's not just the park system, but that's an example definitely of the park system. Visitor programs, schools have planned trips to national parks. Those aren't happening. That's a real life example.
And when you were talking about things people can do a moment ago, Paul, particularly about going online and finding out what's open and what's not open, here's Rich, who suggests document trash in parks, get pictures, video, everything, use them in anti-Trump campaign spots. Paul?
Well, as a journalist, I love it when people document things. So take pictures, post them online. The public loves parks. They want to see what's happening in them. And there are 418 national park units, and KQED and the Bay Area newspapers staff can't be in all of them. So the public can help.
And volunteers can help, too. I mean, I want to emphasize that again. There are a lot of people who are stepping up and volunteering, and it really makes a difference, doesn't it?
It does. And we've seen, you know, a lot of parks have these groups, sort of friends of whatever park group, that are already established, which is great. And, you know, in places like Joshua Tree, for example, they have been going out and, you know, picking up trash and in some cases even cleaning restrooms and doing things like that. Obviously, that's not really a sustainable thing. You know, one thing we should mention, which is allowing some of these parks to open, but which is controversial, is, you know, after Ryan Zinke left or was forced out or whatever, you know, as Interior Secretary a few weeks ago, the acting Interior Secretary, a guy named David Bernhardt, he's a former lobbyist for Westlands Water District in the Central Valley, as well as some oil companies, he put out a notice a few days ago that allowed superintendents of parks to dip into their entrance fee money to bring people back on and to do some opening, to open some restrooms, to do a little bit more work. That law is called the Federal Lands Recreation Enhancement Act. It was originally signed by President Bush 15 years ago. There's a big debate over what should happen with that money. Some people, including environmental groups, argue this is an incorrect use of the money, that the money is supposed to go to pay down maintenance backlogs and projects in the parks. Conservatives like Tom McClintock, the Republican congressman who represents Yosemite, are praising this, saying, hey, it's the people's parks. Do everything you can to let them in. Also, the gateway communities, hotels, gas stations, restaurants, they're victims in this, too. So they're saying this is a good thing.
Speaking about good things, I just wanted to add a note here. The Fish and Wildlife Service has actually added additional staff, and this is in about 36 national parks to help with wildlife refuges. But for the most part, they can use all the volunteer help that they can get in the parks, and I think Ryan wants to speak to that point. Ryan, join us. You're on.
Yes, hi. Yeah, you've been talking about, you know, volunteer work, and I'd like to know some specific places I could go to. I live in Berkeley, so I'd like to help out up at Muir Woods and Point Reyes if possible. So I'm wondering what the best way to do it. I mean, do I just go up there with a trash bag, or is there a group that's kind of organizing things, or does Fish and Wildlife Service have some channels?
Paul Rogers, some thoughts?
You know, I will defer to Neil on that. He's going to know. He's going to know better than I.
Neil,
I mean, groups are popping up here and there, and there's really not a coordinated effort. So I think getting on social media and seeing what's going on is probably the best way.
Good luck to you. Thank you, Ryan.
And certainly, if you go into a park, bring a trash bag. You don't need an organization. If you see trash on the ground, pick it up. You know, that's doing your part. I certainly think that's good. You know, one thing about volunteers in environmental disasters, when we have oil spills in San Francisco Bay, people want to go rushing down to the shoreline and clean up the oil, but they can't because there are federal regulations about toxic chemicals, and you have to have training before you can clean it up. In this case, you don't need any training to pick up trash. So if you go into a park, bring a trash bag.
James is next. James, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My wife and kids stopped at Grand Canyon on the way back from visiting family for the holidays. We had planned it out for a while, but then the shutdown kicked in. Normally there's a $35 gate fee, but there was no one there to collect it. And there were hundreds of people there, you know, tons of cars, multiple parking lots were full right at the kind of get out site. The bathrooms were closed, like everyone's been saying, the visitor center was closed. And the big thing that stuck out to me was, like, how is that gate money spent? I mean, if it's $35 per person and there's still hundreds of people going into the open park, you know, how much money is being lost? How much of that would be funds for the parks and things like that?
Yeah, Neil.
So parks are losing right now across the country $400,000 a day in uncollected fee revenue. So it's significant. And these fees are supposed to be used for things like fixing trails, visitor and education programs, addressing the Park Service's $11 billion repair backlog. So it's significant, and so the parks are not able to collect them on as one part of this. they're also being forced by, the current acting Secretary of Interior to identify how much money they have in their accounts and raid and pillage them and spend them on doing the basic work of attempting to keep parks open and reducing the negative headlines that are affecting essentially the political officials in Washington, D.C. It's a complete misuse of funds.
A lot of that money was actually geared toward maintenance.
Exactly. I mean, there's money slated right now for Muirwoods National Monument, a trail bridge replacement. That's a proper use of those funds, and that's what the public expects. But who knows what type of funding will be available. In many cases, these parks have been saving these funds over many years in order to pool up enough to address some of these problems. So it's
grim.
Yeah.
And it's also something that occurs to me that brings out not only the best of people, those who volunteer and those who want to help and those who are concerned, but also the worst of people. There's a lot of wildlife poaching. There's concern about abalone on the coast, for example, because they're getting access now through the parks. And a lot of things really to consider here and be concerned about. Let me go to another caller from Slide Ranch. Micah joins us. Micah, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi. Well, thank you so much for having this. The Slide Ranch, we were founded in 1970. So next year is going to be our 50th anniversary. And right now we are a little bit nervous because we are renewing our agreement for the next 10 years. And, of course, the government shutdown, although we sign a we don't depend on the park services to remain open, it is still extending our timeline to renew our agreement. And also we are trying to build a new workshop, an ADA garden, and we have to work with the national park to have, with the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. And again, this government shutdown is really extending our timeline, so we are really hoping that this will cease very soon, just because we cannot operate without that agreement.
Yeah. No, thank you, Micah. Good to hear from you. Appreciate your call. And let me read a comment from a listener named Sophie who says, I visited Joshua Tree over New Year's. It was crowded, and I couldn't help thinking of all the money the park was losing. I hope that everyone who visited national parks during the closure will buy an annual parks pass or make a contribution to their favorite park or national park service. Let me bring another caller aboard. That's you, Rocket. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hi. I'm hello, Forum and everyone. I'm calling as a representative of SF Dog, and we're really concerned about the safety issues with Fort Funston's parking lot being closed. We have offered to help pay for cleanup in order to allow them to open the gates, and it seems like if Bay Area dog groups and the National Park Service can agree on something, which hardly ever happens, and surely the national leadership can figure out how to open the gates, open the government.
Neil Desai, let's go to you.
I'm not sure exactly about that, what negotiations you've been having, it speaks to the different types of impacts that we're seeing around the country. I mean, the callers, the people that have called in have talked about three very distinct different types of issues. Public access, continuing just basic business operations of leasing, continuation of research. I mean, these are all the different ways that government shutdown impacts national parks, not to mention the government shutdown impacting all other aspects of people's lives. I mean, Park Service employees are not getting paid, even the ones that are being forced to work.
We have Jackie Speer, and I want to go to her now. I had mentioned earlier, Congresswoman, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
I'd said earlier that you and Jared Huffman, Representative Huffman, went over to Pennsylvania Avenue and left some trash there.
Yeah, we collected trash at GGNRA over the weekend at Land's End and Ocean Beach. We boxed it up and shipped it back to D.C. and then delivered it to the White House. Unfortunately, the president did not want to receive them. But,
did he get word that you had left the trash there, or do you know if it is going to make any impact at all?
I think the impact we were trying to make is that the president is conducting a political stunt here, and so we did a tit for tat. This is a phony shutdown, and it is costing a lot of people a lot of anguish, and some people their lives. We've had three people in national parks that have lost their lives, and the question is, if all the services were available, would they be alive or not? I don't know the answer to that. We're losing the revenues from fees, that the admission fees each day. It's, I think, over $400,000 a day that we're losing there.
Yeah, that's a figure we heard before.
And we have many of them that have been beaten up so badly. Joshua Tree, as you've probably heard, has been closed because there was a lot of damage done to some of the flora and fauna. There's trash everywhere. There is, I guess, there are some bathrooms in some of our national parks are going to have to be totally redone. Now, I don't know how much of that is just because people have abused them or that it's been overused. But the shutdown is a gimmick that is really costing people serious lives. But the $5 billion the president wants for a border wall is a dumb medieval wall. What we're saying is this is the 21st century. We need a smart tech wall. And that means putting ground sensors in, using blimps. The Customs and Border Patrol officers say that is the most cost-effective way of being able to monitor the border. Having more immigration judges. There's 750,000 asylum cases backlogged. If they, you know, come into the country, spend 3 or 4 years here, they get married, they have children. I mean, the issues become that much more complex. So I think that there is a better way of securing the border, certainly a much more advanced, high-tech way than building an edifice to deal with the president's complex that he has.
We have just seconds left, but the president said earlier today that he essentially describes himself as an expert on technology and said a few days ago he knows more about technology than anyone, but he says technology isn't enough. You need the wall.
So this is the same man who knows more than his generals. He knows more about health care. He could fix that in 20 minutes. I mean, he is living in a fantasy world, and at some point, we have to call him on it. And in part, that's what we're doing here.
Well, we got to leave it there. Representative, thank you so much for joining us. That's Congresswoman Jackie Speier. We're going to wrap it up here. Thanks to Neil Desai. Thanks to Paul Rogers. Another hour ahead. Stay tuned for that. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, who believe that all people deserve access to education and culture to enrich a lifetime of exploration and learning.